Good morning, everyone. How's God's church doing today? Hot? We're out towing kids around on tubes on the lake yesterday, and I thought, this is way, even on the lake, it's too hot. This is nuts. Well, I want to begin this morning by asking you a question. Have you ever laughed when it was inappropriate to do so? Okay, we have a winner. Let me tell you a story this morning. Let me begin with a story. During the Second World War, my dad was in the Royal Canadian Air Force on the crew of a Canso flying boat posted in Gander, Newfoundland, patrolling the North Atlantic for German U-boats. And by the war's end, he and his crew were something of celebrities because they were among only a handful of airmen who were shot down over Canadian territory. In the summer of 1944, Eastern Air Command was alerted to the presence of a U-boat sitting in the mouth of the St. Lawrence Seaway. My dad's crew responded, and they dropped a single depth charge, hoping to score a hit. But when they flew back over to check out the results, the sub had surfaced and the German deck gunner jumped out and shot the living dickens out of their flying boat. It was apparently, you could see the ocean through the holes. Well, they ended up with no operable landing gear. And they'd already primed another depth charge under the wing, so their squadron leader didn't want them to risk a water landing. So they had to belly land back in Gander, and by apparently the depth charge went off anyhow. By some miracle, the crew walked away, although most of them, including my dad, sustained some injuries. My dad ended up with a pretty serious head injury. Now, because of their semi-celebrity status, their crew was invited to dinner by the then Governor General of Canada, Sir Alexander Cambridge, the Earl of Athlone. His wife was Princess Alice, granddaughter of Queen Victoria. Now, when the airmen entered the dining hall and took their seats, my dad discovered he was seated right next to Princess Alice. His commanding officer was on the other side, and across the table was their starboard waist gunner, who was the biggest clown on the crew. The dinner began well. My dad still had his head bandaged, and the princess was quite interested in the state of his recovery. But partway through the meal, noticing that the lord and lady were turned and occupied in a conversation with the servers, the waist gunner across the table stuck a pickle fork in each ear, a breadstick up each nostril, and he made a face at my dad, like this. Well, my dad started to laugh. Well, unfortunately, he had just taken a mouthful of coffee. And as he sputtered and gagged and turned purple, he spun to his right only to see his commanding officer sitting there in full dress uniform. And he managed an about face only to spew a mouthful of coffee all over Princess Alice's back. My dad then broke into loud and raucous guffawing. He said he wasn't sure if her ladyship thought it was due to his head injury or not, but she simply turned around to him and said, oh, Flight Sergeant, don't you find the weather in Ottawa awfully muggy this time of year? True story. Anyhow, this morning we're going to talk about a person who laughed at what appeared to be a most inappropriate time, but her embarrassment was witnessed by a much more important figure than a mere lady of the realm. This morning we're going to move forward in our series entitled Created to be God's Friend. And I was just checking to make sure we had the right one this week, so... Created to be God's friend. And we're going to take a look at chapter 18 in the book of Genesis. We're following the story of Abraham, a man whose encounters with God are considered to be something of a pattern for our own lives. In other words, when we read the story of Abraham, what we need to be looking for is parallels with our own story. Does that mean we're going to encounter the exact same experiences as Abraham? Of course not. But there's going to be some similarities. And it's good to be aware of what those are. Now, Genesis 18, verse 1 begins with this sentence. The Lord appeared to Abraham near the great trees of Mamre while he was sitting at the entrance to his tent in the heat of the day. Now, Mamre is on a site located on a hill on the ancient road that follows the ridge north from Hebron toward Jerusalem. Archaeologists aren't completely certain where ancient Mamre is located, but in 1884, builders were excavating the foundation for a structure in Madaba, Jordan, and they found an old Greek Orthodox church dating from 560 AD. And on the floor, under a layer of other tile, was this map. Now, it's a little hard to see here, but it's known as the Madaba Mosaic. And on that map, just to see, it's really hard to see here, but there's a pillar on the right-hand side that was built over top of it. They retiled it, put a pillar on top of it. Just to the left of that pillar, there's a little tree on the map in mosaic, and it's labeled Mamre. And that map marks the spot where this tree is located. Now, it's not very impressive. All that green stuff in the background is not part of this tree. Those are other trees that have grown from seeds that likely came from this one. But it's a terebinth tree. And it's known to locals as the Tree of Abraham. King Herod, Josephus, the Jewish historian, Constantine, they all visited this tree. It's the only functioning Christian shrine in the Hebron area. Tradition states that this is the tree that Abraham was sitting under when the Lord appeared to him. Is this tree ancient enough to be the exact tree that Abraham sat under? It's doubtful. Abraham lived about 4,000 years ago. Now, the Russian Orthodox Church bought this site in 1868, but in 1996, the Russian Orthodox Church declared that this tree was finally dead. Now, that was bad news for the Russian Orthodox Church, because they have a tradition that when the tree of Abraham dies, the Antichrist will appear. But in 1998, the tree grew a sprout. You see this? I don't know. I do. See this little thing right here? Came up from the roots and popped up there. So as long as the monks of the Holy Trinity Russian chapel keep watering it, we're going to be okay. All right? But if ancient maps and oral tradition can be trusted, this is at least the grove of terebinth trees where Abraham encountered God. Now, verse 2 in Genesis 18 says this. It says, Abraham looked up and saw three men standing nearby. When he saw them, he hurried from the entrance of his tent to meet them and bowed low to the ground. Now, let's just stop there and bring this picture into focus. Abraham was a patriarchal tribal leader. The Bible tells us that he had his own private army of 318 men who were born into his household. That doesn't include mothers, fathers, children, men who weren't in his army. Most biblical scholars estimate that Abraham's retinue numbered at least 2,000 people. He was an important guy. Now, we know that one of the highest cultural values of the ancient Near East was hospitality. It still is in the East today. But for a tribal leader of that importance to rush from his tent and bow down before three total strangers is a bit odd. What we have going on here is what the Bible calls a theophany. That's a fancy word, but what it means is that in certain unusual situations in the Bible, God sometimes appears in human form. In Genesis chapter 3, we find the story of Adam and Eve in the walking in the garden of in the Garden of Eden, and it says here, "Then the man and his wife heard the sound of the Lord, and he was walking in the garden, as he was walking in the garden in the cool of the day. And they hid from the Lord God among the trees of the garden." That's a theophany. God was walking in the garden in human form. Somehow, you know, probably through spiritual discernment, I think Abraham was pretty good at that, Abraham understood that he was looking at God in human form. What's really interesting about theophanies in the Bible is that sometimes the human figure is initially referred to as an angel of the Lord, but within a couple of verses, it becomes clear that it's not an angel speaking, it's God. Now, we don't find theophanies very often in the Bible, but we do find them. It's one of the mysteries of God. But here's what Abraham said. He said, "If I have found favor in your eyes, my Lord, do not pass your servant by. Let a little water be brought, and then you may all wash your feet and rest under this tree. Let me get you something to eat so you can be refreshed, and then go on your way now that you have come to your servant." "Very well," they answered. "Do as you say." So Abraham hurried into the tent to Sarah. "Quick," he said, "get three seahs of the finest flour and knead it and bake some bread." Now, when I first read this, I thought, okay, Eastern hospitality, Abraham's getting his wife to make a few sandwiches for his visitors. But then I thought, how much is three seahs of flour? And I looked it up. It's 22 liters of flour. It's almost exactly a 5-gallon pail. Now, either God and his angels are really big eaters, or there's something else going on here. Do you remember last week when I said that the Bible's a really abbreviated book? Not everything that's going on is laid out in detail. I think what's happening here is that Abraham wasn't alone when he met with God. That's what's not told. A tribe of 2,000 plus people, they would have had leaders, they would have had other important men who worked under Abraham. Sarah would have been with her own group. She didn't just whip up 5 gallons of flour and pop a few hundred loaves of flatbread into 20-odd ovens. This is an event. We always have to remember that a description of what one person is doing in the Bible does not exclude the presence of others. These verses are describing an Eastern feast. Look at verse 7 and 8, it says, "Then he ran to the herd and selected a choice, tender calf and gave it to a servant who hurried to prepare it. He then brought some curds and milk and the calf that had been prepared, and he set these before them. While they ate, he stood near them under a tree." You don't cook a cow in a couple of minutes, okay? Not even a little one. This is an event. This is a feast. Abraham was offering the fullness of his hospitality to his visitors. Verse 9 reads, "Where is your wife Sarah?" they asked him. "They're in the tent," he said. You know, 2 weeks ago I said that God often asks questions he already knows the answer to. God knew where Sarah was. He knew she was standing just inside the tent, only a few feet away. He also knew that she was eavesdropping on the conversation. God just wanted to make sure that both she and Abraham were paying attention to what he was going to say next. Verse 10, "Then one of them said, 'I will surely return to you about this time next year, and Sarah, your wife, will have a son.'" Now, Sarah was listening at the entrance to the tent, which was behind him. Abraham and Sarah were already very old, and Sarah was past the age of childbearing. So Sarah laughed to herself as she thought, after I am worn out, my Lord is old, will I now have this pleasure? Okay, here's where this laughter thing comes in. Last week I talked about how God appeared to Abraham to change his name and tell him the name of the son who was going to be born to him. At that time, Abraham laughed. And God told him that he was about to name his son, he was to name his son Isaac, which is Hebrew for he laughs. In this story, Sarah also laughed, but it was apparently a different kind of laugh. Abraham's was a laugh of faith. I think Sarah's was a laugh of unbelief. She was running into the same problem a lot of Christians do when the years start piling up. Listen to how she describes herself here. After I am worn out and my Lord is old, will I now have this pleasure? She thought her days of being used by God were over. She was 91 years old. But you don't have to be 91 to feel worn out. You know, I'm in my 60s. Next year, I'll officially be on old age security. You know you're old when the government puts it in writing, okay? And then they pay you to be old. That's great. You know, Canada's the only country. They pay you to be young. They pay you to be old. In the middle, you pay. You know, one of my grandsons asked me how old I was. I told him that when I was born, the Dead Sea had just started to feel sick. same grandson was looking through my old pictures, and he said, Grandpa, why are they all in black and white? I said, they're not in black and white. We didn't have color in the world back then. I said, the hippies brought us color in the 60s. I said, when I was a kid, people used to get eaten by tigers all the time because they thought they were petting zebras. Do you know what I love most about being a grandpa? They go to school and they tell their teachers that. My grandpa said, it's true. Anyhow, the deal is, to quote Yogi Berra in the 1973 pennant race, it ain't over till it's over. You can wear out if you want it, just don't rust out. Why in the world would I want my body to last longer than the work God has for me? Why would I want to run 10 feet short of the finish line and then stop? I've heard people say, well, I've had my kick at the can. It's time for someone younger to take over. That's insane in a way. It's one of the things that's wrong with today's world. You spend 70 or 80 years giving all that life wisdom, and then you pull over on a siding and let, you know, the new engine go by. It's not that younger people shouldn't take over. Now, that's okay. It's just that God intended his church to be multi-generational. We're all supposed to be in the game. If you're breathing, God still has a call on your life. There's a lots left to do. Sarah thought she had rusted out. She thought she was done. And God challenged her for it. We read in verse 13, then the Lord said to Abraham, why did Sarah laugh and say, will I really have a child now that I'm old? Is anything too hard for the Lord? I will return to you at the appointed time next year, and Sarah will have a son. You know, it's easy to get down on Sarah in this story, judge her for her lack of faith. But you know, we're kind of all guilty of the same thing. Sarah was simply believing in the natural order of things. Women do not conceive at 91 years of age. Things don't work that way. It's against the rules of nature. People don't get healed of things that doctors don't have answers for. It's against the rules of nature. Relationships don't get restored after people have gone their separate ways. It just doesn't happen. Our loved ones who've been running from God all their lives don't just decide to one day become Christians. Uh-uh. Things don't work that way. Do you know what the word supernatural means? You know, our culture has gotten hold of this word and they've bent its original meaning. To most people, supernatural is walking through an old building with night vision, jumping at every sound they hear. I don't know, have you ever tried to watch one of those shows? You know, what was that? Did you hear that? You know, I hear knocking. Are you there? Meanwhile, the producer's downstairs hopping around on one foot because he stubbed his toe in the dark. Clunk, clunk. Supernatural comes from the words super and natura. It means beyond nature. the Christian life is supposed to have supernatural moments. You know, there's two mistakes Christians make when it comes to the supernatural. One is to believe that everything that happens in a Christian life is supernatural. I'm sorry, but taking out the garbage is not supernatural. The other mistake is to believe that nothing that happens in a Christian's life is supernatural. Sometimes God touches our lives and he transcends the natural order. We can't make him do that. We can't compel him to do that. We can ask him to do it. But sometimes he chooses to do things that go beyond nature. We also have to remember when we read this story that those words came from the mouth of God himself. Is anything too hard for the Lord? And that brings us back to the title of this morning's message, Is Your God Too Small? That's a question the story of Sarah and the three angels poses to us. Do you have a tendency to keep God confined within the laws of nature? Are there things you refuse to believe God for? Do they seem too impossible, too unachievable? Do you know what happens when you put God in the box? I've discovered this through experience. You know, we open the lid to take a look at him only to discover that it's really us who is in the box and God is on the outside filling the vast expanses of the universe with his power and his presence. We haven't shut him in, we've shut him out. Our story ends with a bit of denial on the part of Sarah. Here's what it says in verse 15. Sarah was afraid, so she lied and said, I did not laugh. But he said, yes, you did laugh. Sarah probably should have known better. You can't lie to God. Always makes me wonder why we persist in doing it. And again, I think it's something we all struggle with. You know, we start out by telling ourselves a lie, and once we've repeated the lie enough times that we believe it, we try it out on God. We see if he'll buy it. You know, I would love to change God, but I can't because of blank. If I only had more time, I could only accomplish blank. Here's one of my favorite. If I opened up and showed people who I really am, they wouldn't like me very much. I know that. You know, when I was working at the prison, I think I had the most successful counseling people when I sat down and let them relate their stories. And when they got to the part where they were telling themselves a lie, I would say, could you repeat that? Because once you kind of lay a lie out on the table, you see it for what it is. Sarah laughed the laugh of unbelief. And then she lied to God about it. I think lying to God is a surefire symptom that your perception of God is too small. Now, it wasn't the last time Sarah laughed. A year later, when she gave birth to a baby boy named Isaac, she laughed again and she said, God has blessed me with laughter, and all who get the news will laugh with me. It's amazing how big God suddenly becomes in our lives when we allow him to simply do what he does best. Our God walks on water. He raises the dead back to life. He calls us into an inseparable relationship with him. He created nature. He's the Lord of nature. But he's not restrained by nature. Is your God too small? Are you unwilling to let him be who he is? Are you willing to step out and believe him for something in your life?